SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. Del Mar, day two. Summer underway, where the turf meets the surf, and where... got to come up with a clever moniker. Beside the foothills of the Adirondacks, something the what used to be the August place to be, now the summer place to be. I'm going to work on that. We should have a contest. Nickname, new tagline. The August place to be was very good, and because of course there were two different ways to interpret August, which I. You know, made it particularly, I thought, perfect, but it expanded beyond August. And tomorrow, the season gets underway. The Saturday cards drawn around North America. Pair of graded stakes at both Del Mar and Saratoga. Really, really good. And we'll do some recapping, of course, of Del Mar opening day. We'll also talk more Del Mar with Tom Quigley, bottom of this hour. And then in hour three, where Quigley typically turns up, 8 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern, Dave Grenick with his counterpoint, his counterpunch, to home game, Jay Pridman. Dave, with his own juvenile preview column. And we'll talk about the horses on hand at Saratoga and the early glances and the early themes of the meet with Dave Grenick. We'll talk a little bit more about being over there. I was swaying by. I told you yesterday after I got off the air, was going over and... We've got the three new two-year-olds, and they're over and got a chance to play with them. I got to play with two of them. One of them is less pleasant than the others. Corporal Magdalena, she's a little testy. and the other two, though, the Colt, Kid Chocolate, and I should say actually the Ridgeling, because Kid Chocolate's a rig, and the adorable Minute Mouse. Plus, we've got Carlisle Bell. It's fun when you have horses over at the Oklahoma when the barns shift gear and come upstate. It's such an enhancement of the experience. I encourage anybody. There's a way for all of you to get involved. And listen, betting gets you involved. You own a horse for that minute and 10 seconds or minute and 48, but with all the different avenues open to you, when you've got the opportunity to go over and hang out, whether it's over at the main track or on the Oklahoma side, the training track, over at Clare Court, there's so many places, particularly in the morning. That's the special experience, and that's not exclusive to Saratoga. I mean, obviously, when we're at Santa Anita, that's an incredible morning experience. But every track, any place, coming out in the morning, if you've never done it, you do it. Go out early one morning before you go to work. You want to put yourself in a good mood and just going to watch the horses. Even if you don't know anybody, it's okay. You just watch the horses gallop and. You bring a cup of coffee and a breakfast pastry. The opening day at Del Mar, as we'll dig in and talk about yesterday, dominated. I mean dominated. By two big barns. And Doug O'Neill making an incredible splash in the first half of the day, winning four of the first five races. Jerry Hollendorfer snuck in there and won the third race. That was the only non-O'Neill in the pick five. O'Neill just off to a screaming start. Mario Gutierrez, the beneficiary, three of them. Rafi Bejarano started things off in that claiming opener on Popular Kid. And most of these were popular selections and plays in terms of favorites and second choice types. That early pick five, a nice $1,000. And really the toughest horse probably in the sequence was Ann Arbor Eddie of O'Neill's. Everybody else was pretty, you know, pretty haveable and approachable. That was a tricky horse. Ann Arbor Eddie, the good 4-year old that was in that allowance, and you could see Ann Arbor Eddie set up shop with Gutierrez and just, it was a presence throughout the race. And then mid-stretch, you could see that he was moving well and strongly. And Ritzy AP, who would have been another favorite that would have depressed the things price-wise in the pick five, in the early pick four. Early pick four, the new addition to the betting menu. And actually, it handled quite nicely, a little under 400,000. But then in the second half, once O'Neill was done for the day, Hollendorfer picked up the mantle. He wins the sixth and the seventh. And this is certainly notable. Shiver Me Timbers against Elders might have been for the first time. It was for the first time. Shiver Me Timbers faces Elders for the first time, and I thought it ran a very polished race and got a nice ride from Smith inside. Had to be patient for a certain period and threatened to be bottled up. But then Shiver Me Timbers, when the running off the turn started, was in great position. That gets us to the heralded maiden race of the day. And Brill, I understand plenty of people. All summer long, there's going to be horses like this that are going to get a lot of press and are going to be, as famously termed, the fastest horse in the world. Brill lives up to expectation and lives up to the $1 million price tag and everything else. And the filly had a kind of a awkward, scrambled beginning. I saw some speculation that the ground, yeah, it's one of those circumstances sometimes when a horse, depending on where, how they're standing, maybe Tony Black can even touch on this later. You see the term or the verbiage, ground broke away. It basically means that, you know, the dirt under the horse's feet as they try to push off kind of don't get traction. Either their feet aren't settled or they're in, they just find a footing that, you know, that isn't easy to press off against. And that's kind of what it looked like. You could see kind of that little bobbling, tangled, you know, first step and a half. It didn't take her long, though, to recover. And Smith, yeah, this was only 5 furlongs. Van Dyke, Drayden Van Dyke, who now has won on the two big horses so far from the 2-year-old season for Jerry Hollendorfer and Larry Best. Instagrammed, of course, at Los Al a couple of weeks ago. But Brill, Van Dyke had to ask her probably about just past the opening quarter. And because she had, you know, she had spotted the leaders some ground. And I thought Van Dijk did everything right in terms of letting her settle for the first, you know, first eighth, first 250 yards. And she cruises up to the leaders, and then as things started to, you know, not the as defined by Gary Young earlier yesterday, the, you know, the short stretch, she was leveling off and finished well. So it wins by a length and change. I posted last hour an 88 buyer, which is the best by a filly so far, a two-year-old, and equals the 88 of Instagram in his winning debut. He went off by 10. In this case, you know, the horse that was second, Del Mar May, and she was an outsider, Corey Nakatani and Richard Baltus. And you'll recall from yesterday, we'll get opinion today from Quigley, but recall what Gary Young said when I asked for, you know, the next level of barn. And Jay Privman reflects this as well in his two-year-old piece, Richard Baltus. And here was a Jimmy Creed filly. And it is notable, Jimmy Creed, with his first-time starters, wins at 18%. 36% in the money. And that was a good effort by a modestly priced two-year-old, a $55,000 purchase, and not nearly as fancy a pedigree, obviously, as the million-dollar Brill, Medaglia d'Oro, out of the Malibu Moon filly, and bred by Mike Moreno, Southern Equine. And she obviously is, as suggested by many, heading, you know, toward the Del Mar Philly Stakes, undoubtedly. Brill with a brilliant start. But Del Mar May ran a very nice race. And connection-wise, Baltus and Corey Nakatani aboard. And Del Mar May drew in, actually, too, from the outside. This was a Keeneland September yearling, also out of a Malibu Moon filly, bred by T.C. And watch for her next time, because that's going to be a, you know, low 80s buyer in its own right. True Validity, the experienced, one of two experienced fillies in here. Bizwax kind of broke behind the field and never really put in a rally, but True Validity, she won't be a maiden long either for Simon Callahan. And obviously we'll get to Callahan momentarily, because he wins the nightcap with a horse that was overpriced upon retrospect. But let's get to the Oceanside and this big bulky group of 14 that had so many ways to go. John White on Tuesday, there was one way to go, and that was with Restrained Vengeance, that John stressed, with Evan Roman, Val Brinkerhoff, and 11-1, 2480. I thought the runner-up, A Fleet Ascent, was a more of a difficult horse to include than Restrained Vengeance. I used Restrained Vengeance third. I talked yesterday about Artie Be Good, and I wasn't alone, I guess, because he got bet down to 7-1 from the 20-1, and he was not a sneaky horse at all, and you know, it's funny. He looked like he was actually in a decent spot and had no rally, but meanwhile, restrained vengeance. And Evan Roman with a very plus performance had come in with that Delmar placing in his career debut. He's a hold me back. Bred by Westwind Farm, was a $67,000 would have been a $67,000 Keeneland September purchase out of a red ransom mare. Nice. And Restrained Vengeance has really done very little wrong, to be honest. I mean, this was a breakthrough in terms of stakes. He had tried the Zuma Beach and the Singletary. But he was strong in here. And looked very much, particularly around the turn, looked like a winner. And keyed some big fat mutuals. Calyx Man was a good third in here. Desert Stone, another head or two back, trying to rally from off the pace. They didn't go. I'll tell you one thing. They didn't go fast. That'll tell you. What was the 111 for three quarters and 47-1, 22-4 opening quarter. So not much of a pace setup for anybody that wanted to rally. Desert Stone was 12th early and got as close as a length and a half, two lengths at the finish. Bob Grayson and Kelly Brinkerhoff are the owners. That boosted the late mutuals. And even with the single, I singled Brill on all tickets. Super Duper Cooper, as we talked with Michael McCarthy, a winner with the 7-pound bug. Aza Espinosa. And that got us live. We were live in the pick five with Selwood. And then had a handful of horses in the pick four. And Kazan from inside got away at 14-1. It was a C for me. You would have had to have played, and I didn't play it. I did not play the full $190 ticket, the expanded ticket with ABC, full use of backup C tickets. I just didn't feel like playing it. I wasn't unhappy with the structure. I wasn't even unhappy getting beat, but Kazan, when you look back, no way. The 14-1, if you got in on that, that was the score of the day, along with Restrained Vengeance. So the mutuals, pick six paid $45,475. The late pick four, $888. 65 cents. And the pick five, almost $2,800. Good mutuals, good day to start Del Mar. We're just getting going. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. DAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing.
Additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. They went around and around yesterday, and they'll do it again at Del Mar today. Day two, an eight-race card, and then tomorrow, the Oceanitas, the counterbalance to the Oceanside, same, you know, the non-winners of a sweepstakes. These are fun. These are always, they're always intriguing because you get, in some cases, you get, you know, horses that might have been stake winners the year before. Typically they run these for three-year-olds. We have them at Saratoga as well, the De La Rose and more. They invariably, you know, provide opportunity. And you look at what happened yesterday, that's what, you know, that's what the big fields do. Horses like the winner go off at square prices. And as John White explained, there was plenty to like about Restrained Vengeance. And, you know, then even in the nightcap, in the maiden that I just mentioned, with the upset and a $30 winner. Same thing. You know, big, nice, full field. So gotta try to, you know, try to stay abreast and you know, get some replay watching in. You know, as we talked with Gary Young yesterday, with all this turf racing, there'll be plenty of opportunity for bet backs and, you know, some horses that not that trouble is the only barometer when you're trying to find bet backs, but there's, you know, horses that never got a chance to put their run in and may have been trapped and may have been blocked. So we'll try to do some of that. And it's not going to be easy, I'll tell you right now, because yesterday, once they drew and once I got back from Saratoga and settled in to watch the racing, I printed out the Saturday cards for both Saratoga and Del Mar, and right away you realize you get drawn in. Let's get a glance ahead, and we'll also do it some more with Grenig. But in addition, of course, to tomorrow, the Lake George and the Schuylerville, you come right back with the older fillies and mares in the Diana, the Grade One, the first Grade One of the meet, and the Sanford. And Sanford drew you know, these early season, some years, you know, a little tricky with the two-year-olds, but the Sanford drew a fun, eclectic bunch. And we got a handful of others that we'll look at in a minute. Let me slip in while we have a chance, because George Velasquez can only spend a few minutes with us now. And I mentioned yesterday that Georgie was going to stop by and add to the voices appreciating Manny Ikeza. Yesterday, conversation with Jacinto Vasquez and fellow Panamanian George Velasquez, fellow Hall of Famer, joins us now. Georgie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. And George, around the game, this took people by surprise. And you, yesterday when we talked, you were also just having spoken to Manny days before and planning a function in Panama. Feel terrible. So sorry about this.
Yes, thank you. It is a big surprise because we just spent about 3 days together in Canterbury Park last month. I believe it was the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. And he appears to be in good shape, good health. So it did took me for a big surprise. Manny was a unique person. He was very competitive. He was one of the best riders. He opened up the doors for all those Panamanians who are here in this country as a jockey. And he was lovable. He was he was a gentleman. He was. A guy that was a sweetheart. He wants to, and his personality was perfect. He was a good guy all the way around. He was a tough rider, but he was one of the best. He was just trying to do, you know, to win. So, what else can I say? I'm very sorry about the loss of such a big name in the history of thoroughbreds. And I'm very sorry for his wife, Jeannie, and his family, Manny's family. So what can I say? What else can I say? I'm devastated. I'm very hurt right now.
Well, Georgie, you, like Jacinto, you were about 10 years younger than Manny. And when you were starting to ride, and Jacinto talked about, you know, the way he came up, and I assume the same way for you, but, you know, as you were getting into the game, how far ahead was Manny, and when did you first begin to, you know, become a contemporary of his on the oval?
Well, when I was learning how to ride, I already was riding in this country, or I probably was riding in Mexico, but I always listened to the radio and watching TV, and he was the one that opened up the doors for all of us over here. But he did. I learned how to ride. I came to this country with a contract from Mr. W. Fred Hooper, and I got to ride with Manny and at the end of his career. And you can see, you can tell that he was a good rider, you know, because he still has something left.
His career, when you think about it in today's terms, it was really fairly brief in the final analysis, only about 15, 16 years before the injuries. And I think he was 38 when he stopped riding. You and Jacinto and obviously the others, Lafitte, Pincay, and even if I just confined it to the great Panamanians, I mean Braulio and Solis and of course later Rene Douglas and more. But you got to stay on for a longer period, and was it tough for him to leave that, basically that brief of a career, when, you know, when others rode well into their 40s?
Well, you know, it's always tough to retire. You don't want to retire, but sometimes you are forced to it, and probably had a bad feel or something that made him retire, you know. So, but like you say, about the Panamanian writers, that Panama, being such a small country, it has so many Hall of Fame writers. But he was the one that opened the door for all of us, Manny Cazzo.
We've actually, in these last 2 days, one of the things that people have had, frankly, some fun with, George, is the listing of his infractions when the stewards would sit him down. And there's a real balance in terms of how tough he was on the track, and then from everybody's account, how nice he was and good to everybody away from the track.
Yeah, well, it's I don't know exactly how many races Manny won, but if he won 4,500 races, he probably should have won 10,000 because he was suspended so many times. and even though he was a well-spoken guy, still he gets it done so many times, you know, because in those days you could not get away with what you can get away today.
George Velasquez is with us. George, is there a race that, you know, we know about, you know, the famous Preakness, him on Rydan and Johnny Rotz on Greek Money, and we think about, you know, the incredible Jaipur Rydan Preakness, not Preakness, Travers, and was there a race or a particular moment riding against Manny that sticks in your mind?
Yeah, well, first of all, that race with Johnny Rotz and Manny, I always tease Manny about it. I used to tease him all the time and say, "Man, you wanted to ride two horses, you can only ride one horse." And he's like, he always denies. He says, "I didn't do it. I didn't do anything." And I used to tease him and laugh with him. But it was funny. I remember that he was, when I asked my mother to become a jockey, I told my mother I want to be like Manuel Casa, Braulio Baeza. So those guys are was my idols, both of them. So now I came to this country and I started riding in Jersey for Mr. Hooper. And here comes the Garden State Handicap or whatever, that in state, big race of those days was a $200,000 race. So it was a lot of money for those days. And he's coming to town to ride, I believe it was Dr. Fager. And it was like 9-horse field, and they were breaking from the turn. And I'm anxious to see my guy ride, because that was the first time I was going to watch him ride. And he come out of there, he was number 9, he come out of there, and 2 jumps, he was in the fence. And so but he won by 5 or 6, 8 lengths, and they took his number down, and then I was so disappointed. I said, why? Why? You know, he was in the best horse. You know? So that I remember from Manny, that when I first saw him ride. But after that, I came to New York and we got to ride and we got to become friends and go out for dinner and have fun and everything. He was a nice guy, very nice guy.
I'm looking at one chart I'm going to ask you about. In fact, I'm going to mention two races from 1968. And the one that I would love to find, the video if it's available. You were on Iron Ruler. This is the Jerome, and he was on Captain's Gig for Kane Hoy, for Woody, and you beat him a neck.
Iron Ruler was a nice horse, no? He was a very, very nice horse.
Angel was on Forward Pass, actually. This was a nice running of the Jerome. And
yes, good. Very good.
Well, and you actually corralled Angel first on Forward Pass, and then Manny was trying to get to you late. You also, And a month later, well, you've talked with me so many times about the turf and some of the great turf horses that you rode. And Czar Alexander, a winner over Fort Marcy that year in the Man of War, you and Manny.
Right. I remember, yes. Czar Alexander was trained by Mr. Pena. And he was a nice little horse. He was a nice little horse. And I don't know, those horses, those two horses, they used to be the short. You know, so I'm not going to credit myself for a ride or something.
Well, you won off. Actually, you won. Not only did you win off by three, but you paid $24.80.
Yeah.
Nice job, yeah. George. I wanted to make sure to give you a chance to share your feelings and like everybody else, so sorry about Manny Ikiza really being taken without warning. But at least so many of you got to spend some time with him weeks ago, as you mentioned. Tony Black is coming up next in hour two, and Tony was there as well. And he said to me he can't believe that it was going to be the last time he would see Manny.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what happened to me after that trip. We talked on the telephone a few times, and we was going to get together to go out for dinner. And it never happened. So, God bless him and his family. He's going to be resting now and like people say, in a better place. So, what else can I say?
Well, George Velasquez, always appreciate your visits. We're going to see you Hall of Fame week?
Hopefully, yes, I hope so. I'm playing by ear. I don't know exactly, but I might be there.
Well, I hope so. I got to see George just for a couple of minutes, Belmont week. Georgie, be well. Best to Margarita, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. You have a great day.
George Velasquez, everybody. One of the amazing group that Manny Ikiza led into this country. Lafitte Pincay and Jacinto Vasquez, Braulio Baeza, Georgie, Alex Solis, Renee Douglas. Let's step away.
We'll come back and we'll visit with Tom Quigley, next. Tony Black, top of the hour. Steve Haskin and Dave Grenig and Rich Eng as well. Busy Thursday at the races. Saratoga tomorrow. Del Mar underway. And so much more. Big first summer weekend with graded stakes. I mentioned the Sanford and the Diana. Del Mar, big, big field in the San Clemente. And the San Diego Handicap trying to get a handle toward the Pacific Classic. Dr. Dorr will try to regroup off that Suburban. And Sadler contributed to the entry box. Accelerate, obviously, the short-priced favorite. But he also included Curlin Rules. Dabster, Baffert, sending... Dabster, who, you know, who's one half of his starts, last seen in the San Carlos, going 7/8. He'll stretch out. Who else? Harlan Punch, coming off the win in the Island for Dave Jacobson, who is now fully vested in the California side of his operation. And, of course, the New York horses moved over to Gary Gallo, as we talked with Dave Grenick a couple of weeks ago. Let's make room for Daddy. Tom Quigley, the Big Q. He joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Talking to the biggest names in the sport of kings, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I remember the night the kid got on his right arm.
We're back at the races. Season underway at Del Mar. And Tom Quigley, of course, moves with the circuit and is set up shop in and around Del Mar. And he joins us after a couple of weeks hiatus. And Tom Quigley, good morning.
Steve, good morning, and greetings from where the turf meets the surf. Thank God Bing Crosby was such a forward thinker. I'm sure he had no idea it would turn into such the spectacle that it is, but it's great to be down here. God willing, I'll be at the track every day, and obviously, you know, Steve, a different vibe down here. It's kind of a working vacation for not only myself but many within the industry. Obviously, the racing is still very important and takes top priority, but San Diego is a fun place to come visit, and obviously North County San Diego is probably the place to be in Southern California. I'm happy to be here at least through Labor Day.
Well, we certainly enjoy watching from afar and are appreciative that the Breeders' Cup ended up giving those of us that are, you know, that are basically landlocked when it comes to the summer, it gave us all a chance to enjoy the experience. I'm constantly reminded, though, Tom, that by people that say, well, you've been, but you haven't really been until you're there for the summer session.
Exactly right. You know, for many years, I was the weekend warrior coming down whenever I could, and it was obviously fun, but never the experience that you can have if you're fortunate enough to stay down here for at least a couple of weeks, if not for the meet itself. And so, you know, I wanted to kind of get to a point that I know a lot of your listeners always, you know, want to debate, and I've been fortunate enough to be to both meccas, I call them, Del Mar and Saratoga. And to me, Steve, the big difference is you know, at Saratoga, it's all about the horse. Obviously, I will be the first to concede that Saratoga has the better racing, better quality of racing, the Hall of Fame Museum right across the street, a very special place, and I love Saratoga. And the difference to me is Del Mar is all about the people, right? The horses primarily are the same that we see up at Santa Anita. There's not many shippers. There's not many new faces, but it's really about the people experience. It's about the social experience at the track. It's about the social experience after the races. Tons of parties that are industry related, tons of great restaurants. And so, you know, different people have different choices and different biases. Both are great. You should, I know you've been, but those listeners listening who have never been to Del Mar, give it a shot. I mean, this was the perfect week to come out before Saratoga started. You could have taken in the races yesterday and today if you were aggressive from a plane trip standpoint. But if you've never been, you definitely have to check out Del Mar, no matter how much you might love Saratoga.
We'll talk about some of the pushes and some of your favorite places in a minute. I do want to mention that the numbers, attendance down just a tick, but most importantly, the postscript from Breeders' Cup and the mid-30s attendance makes Del Mar much more comfortable on a big day, and that was widely acknowledged. I saw Harper's comments to Steve Anderson or to Jay Pribman, and you know the 40,000 scene didn't really benefit anybody, and so a very good, vibrant crowd. Numbers were very strong for the opening day card.
You know, Del Mar copied Keeneland's blueprint, Steve, and what Keeneland did, and we've all been to Keeneland on a crazy day like the Bluegrass where everybody's back packed in like sardines. They didn't want that experience to happen at the Breeders' Cup, and so, of course, the ticket prices increased, but at the same time, those who could afford it really enjoyed the experience at Keeneland, and that's exactly what Del Mar did as well. And like you said, they really learned a lot from that, and let's face it, as we progress through the years, technology becomes more and more accessible, more and more available. So even though people might not have physically been at the track, you know that they were involved paramutually. They were wagering on their phones, their computers, whatever it might be. And let's face it, it's opening day on a Wednesday. You know, corporate America is a very, very busy environment right in the middle of the week. It's difficult for people to come out. And as you indicated, when it's packed to the gills at Del Mar, it's really not an enjoyable experience. So ironically, the fewer the people that are there, the better. Today, ironically, is my favorite day of the meet because it's such a drastic difference in dynamics. You go from 34,000 people down to about 8,000 people, and as Jay Pridman so accurately put, it's like the regular horse players take back the neighborhood. And so today, the card, again, is not filled with quality, but it's a decent card, and it'll be a fun day out at the track because now we can kind of take a deep breath and not stand in line for the concessions and everything else. But believe me, I am more than willing to do that because the more people we can expose to racing, the more happy I am.
Well, let's expose everybody to your themes for Del Mar and can just get some general feel. I did this with Gary Young yesterday. Gary had some interesting perspective. Hammer will visit with us tomorrow. In fact, he called me this morning as he was driving down making his way. And for you, what is your general approach and what consistent opportunities should players watch for, Tom, when they approach the Del Mar cards?
Well, there's a couple of things that I kind of focus in on the most, Steve. And one is, and the more I've handicapped, and I've been handicapping for over 40 years, the more I rely on this. And it's such a simple principle. I think sometimes it gets overlooked, but I see it at Los Alamitos. I see it at Del Mar. I see it at Santa Anita. And it's the simple horses for courses angle. I can't really explain it other than the time of year. But horses who show a propensity, let's use as an example, horses coming down the hill at Santa Anita, if they have previous success coming down the hill, usually they have future success as well. And the same thing is true here at Del Mar. I don't know if it's the sea breeze, the summer air, the more humidity we might have down here farther south in Los Angeles, whatever it might be, horses who've shown a propensity to either enjoy the main track surface now that we've had some consistency the last couple of years or the Del Mar turf course, they always seem to repeat those good performances. So it sounds oversimplified, but when I see a runner that has really taken a liking to either surface historically, it's going to be tough for me to discount that horse in any of my exotic plays. So that's one of the things I really pay a lot of attention to, and it's very simple for no matter how advanced or how new of a handicapper you might be to really, you know, kind of zoom in on that and see if that comes into play this year as well. The other thing I like, and this is just me because I spend every race every day in the paddock, is I really like the two-year-old races. And we saw, obviously, you well know, a spectacular performance yesterday from the Hollendorfer barn with a filly by the name of Brill. And she looked like a million bucks in the paddock, and she ran to her looks. And as these horses kind of make their debuts or maybe make their second or third lifetime starts, you don't need to be a paddock expert, per se, in the paddock, but it pays to go into the paddock and take a look at them to see how well-developed they are, because 90% of the wagering handle is coming in from simulcast outlets around the country. If you're on track, you have a distinct advantage, and you should take advantage of it. And the one race or the one category where you can really separate from the crowd from looks in the paddock is in these two-year-old baby races, particularly down at Del Mar, where some of the more more recognized barn names like Baffert and O'Neill and Miller are going to take all the money. And once in a while, you can find a nugget from maybe a less than a prominent barn name.
Well, and that's one of the tricky portions of this, because when it comes to looking for Hollendorfer, O'Neill, who won 7 of the 10 races yesterday, that's, and Baffert is going to win his share and so forth. When it comes to, let's say, and this is a stake as opposed to a baby race, but yesterday with Val Brinkerhoff and Restrained Vengeance, I mean, here's a horse that it was John White lauded Restrained Vengeance going into yesterday. But when you look at connections, and for those that use that as a tipping of the scales, Tom, when you see Evan Roman and Val Brinkerhoff, you aren't necessarily gravitating in a big field when you're comparing it to the Peter Miller, Flavian Pratt type combos and Baltus Nakatani, etc. So it is, if you start with the horse and the horse's form and opportunity is first and foremost, but then it does come down sometimes when you're building tickets to some of those slightly esoteric leans, and it's tricky. But we want people to be aware of Gary Sherlock, for instance, who always pops with a handful of them, particularly the first half of the meet.
You need separators, right, whenever you want to try and make at least a decent score. And if you have Chad Brown in every single leg of your pick four, you know automatically that it's going to be an underlay. And so, like you said, you need to kind of dig beneath the surface, as Rich Perloff at TVG likes to say, be an archaeologist, and really try and discover some hidden angles. And I mean, obviously red boarding and looking back, it always makes, analyzing the winner a little bit easier. But there were some telltale signs with Restrained Vengeance looking back in retrospect. First of all, he took some action. He was 20-1 on the morning line. I always write down the odds when they walk by me in the paddock. He was 14-1 with effectively 10 minutes to post, and he went off at 11. So he took action throughout the entire betting cycle. So people did, sharp players did like him. He ran against Oler last time. All you needed to do is look to see. He finished fourth in his last race. Second place finisher was Ann Arboretti. Ann Arboretti came back yesterday to win the fifth race. So that race kind of got validated that it was a bit of a live race. And like you said, the obscure connections, not a lot of people, that are casual players are going to gravitate to Brinkerhoff and Roman. But, if you did, you suddenly got rewarded. If you included that horse, if you could make a case on your ticket, whether it was the pick four, the late pick four, the late pick five, suddenly that's the type of winner that kind of opens up the scope of the ticket. So we saw this up north for many, many years with Russell Bays and Hollendorfer dominating. If you could beat them, that's really the key, right? It's easy. It's the easy man's way to handicap, to just include all the Bafferts and the O'Neills. But if you can find a separator. And even looking at the last race, Steve, we had Simon Callahan, who obviously is a very, very good turf trainer. Martin Garcia, I can't even tell you the last time he won a two-turn route race on the grass. But nevertheless, they came home on top with Kazan and paid $30.20 to cap off the proceedings last night. So you just have to be creative in your handicapping. And that's why I think so many horse players like these summer meets at Del Mar and Saratoga, because we see these opportunities a little bit more than we do during the grind of either Belmont or Santa Anita.
Gary yesterday as well talked about some of the vagaries of the turf course, the way it plays as the meet starts and then as it settles into a drum beat and the main track to a degree where the tides and the heat. I mean, we certainly during the synthetic era, Tom, we knew that a cloudy day and a breezy day was going to produce a different surface than like a hot day when the synthetic would get sticky and gummy. But it's still true on the return to dirt. I mean, that main track can be a bit elusive in terms of defining, you know, its properties and, you know, when it speeds up, when it slows down, when it's good inside and when it's good for horses, you know, coming from off the pace and outside.
I mean this as a compliment, but it's almost like trying to solve the riddle of voodoo magic. And I know that many years ago, people would look at tide charts and try and figure out what was going to happen. And I don't have a concrete answer as to why it changes, like you said, from day to day atmospherically. All I can tell you is that it does. And so as handicappers, we have to be flexible. We have to not be so set in our ways, handicap the card in the morning and say, okay, this is the way I'm going to attack the card, and be very rigid. Because if you do that at Del Mar, you're going to wind up with more losing days than you should if you were a little bit more flexible, because you do need to pay attention. I thought yesterday, primarily speaking, I'm not talking about a strong bias, but I thought generally speaking on the dirt course, you had to be kind of positioned outside, more of a rally wide type as opposed to being inside. Now, were there a few winners inside as well? Sure. But even Brill was kind of more toward the center of the track as opposed to inside. And if you go back and watch the replays, I think you just want to kind of pay attention to that's where the winners were positioned. And if you know, if you're a serious handicapper, you want to take note of that, not to take anything away from the winner, but at the same time, just make a note, you know, Formulator is such a great tool for this, where you can put it actually into the past performances and just say, you know, that a horse was positioned inside yesterday when he or she comes back to run, maybe go back, watch the replay, see exactly if in fact that came into play. And maybe upgrade or downgrade based upon where that horse was positioned, that horse's performance. If you do that, because we've been talking about how the track changes so much from day to day, even within the race card itself, that will pay benefits down the road. And I think that's why you see so much chaos early on during the Del Mar meet. And then it starts to tamper down and tone down a little bit as we get deeper into the race meet.
Talk a little, too, about the ebb and flow, and whether you see certain barns that you know will get off the hot starts and others that will kind of feel their way, and particularly maybe when it comes to babies, they'll get a start in for some experience, and then mid-meet and, you know, toward September will then, you know, get serious. I mean, certainly around here, we've gotten used to, you know, Todd Pletcher particularly strong with his early runners, and others, you know, will take their time. How does that play out in your mind and historically?
You know, trends are interesting because I've spent a lot of time doing that in my handicapping research work as well, Stephen. Typically, and I use the word typically very strongly, Peter Miller gets off to a strong start. He lives down in the San Diego area. He obviously has a lot of prominent owners that want to be seen in the winner's circle at Del Mar. That's really the golden brass ring in Southern California, is to get your winner's circle picture taken down in Southern California. Pete's an aggressive type of guy, and so he always likes to do well, and typically he does. But the last couple of years, he hasn't. So you have to, again, be flexible. You can't be set in your ways and say, okay, well, Miller's going to get off to a fast start. I know it because he's done it three of the last 4 years. And then just bet blindly on his horses, because even yesterday he struggled a little bit. Like I said, last year early on he struggled. And so you've got to be careful in terms of getting typecast into that and kind of just see how, using your words, how it ebbs and flows and tides over the course of the meet. But, you know, there are trends that you definitely have to be aware of and see if they continue from year to year. But then you've got overall trends as well. And there was an interesting example of that yesterday in yesterday's, I believe it was the fourth race. It was one of the races, I can't remember which one, where Richie Baltus had a first-time starter who drew in off the also eligible list and ran a bang-up second at 20-1. Well, he was 20-1 because Baltus never wins first time out. And granted, the horse didn't win yesterday first time out because he was 20-1, but still finished a good second. And so Baltus isn't going to change dramatically his training patterns just because he's down here at Del Mar. So you need to know the barns that just historically don't really fire first time out, and then pay more attention to their horses as they come back for their second or third start. And so it's really just all-encompassing, all-comprehensive, right? People ask me, well, how do you handicap? I try and be as comprehensive as possible. I look at every single piece of information available to me, trying to put the piece of the puzzle together. I'm not just going to be exclusive to the sheets or to pedigree or whatever it might be. I want to embrace all of that and see what type of things I can kind of, you know, decipher in order to kind of scope out a winner. And so I think the more encompassing you can be as a handicapper, the better your results will be.
Well, we'll look forward, of course, to checking in on a regular basis. Before we wrap, Tom, looking ahead to San Clemente, big field, and the San Diego is going to start the road to the Pacific Classic, accelerate, and he'll be 3 to 5, I would imagine, 4 to 5 in there. Any other names, any horses that you're particularly looking forward to as the meet unfolds?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Saturday card. And real quickly, Steve, it's a 10-race card. And interestingly enough, I don't follow the condition book at Saratoga or back east that aggressively. But on Saturday's card at Del Mar in the 5th race, they are running a maiden claiming race. And you're like, all right, well, clearly he's lost his mind. He's still hung over from opening day. What's he talking about? But it's a maiden claiming race where the claiming tag is $150,000. And it drew a field of 9.
Yeah.
Maiden two-year-olds going 5 furlongs on the main track. So it'll be interesting. I can't recall a maiden claiming race with that big of a tag associated to it in Southern California. With the sales tax included, which is roughly 10%, it'll be interesting to see if anybody dips in and takes any of these runners. But I like that type of just different type of move that the Del Mar Racing Secretary David Jerkins put together. And as you mentioned, the San Diego Handicap, a great race, a prep race for the Pacific Classic. Interestingly enough, one horse I'm really interested in, Steve, just to see how he runs, is number 3, Sharp Samurai. You know that he's a very good turf horse. Ironically, he's nominated to the Arlington Million. So you scratch your head a little bit and say, okay, why is Glatt putting him in this dirt race when his comeback race was so spectacular? I thought before the entries came out that Sharp Samurai was going to definitely go to the Arlington Million. Now I'm a bit befuddled and confused. So it'll be interesting to see how Sharp Samurai is able to translate, if at all, his turf form onto the main track at Del Mar.
I'm intrigued that you mentioned the $150,000 maiden claimer. And here at Saratoga, usually late in the meet, there will typically be a $100,000 claimer, and there will occasionally be an outfit that poaches. Davy Jacobson has been known to reach in for an $80,000 or $100,000 claim. So this sort of made me crane my head and say, what are we doing here? why? I guess because the maiden specials, what do they run for, the maiden? 50 or 60? 60.
So 60.
This is basically I don't know, is it a way to not have to just sort of a cut beneath the maiden special weights?
It's $43,000 purse, but I just like the fact that at the end of the day, to me, Steve, the market decides everything, whether it's from a gambling standpoint, an auction standpoint. And in this particular case, they wrote the race. They were able to fill the race. And so it's an interesting experiment. And like I said, I have no idea if any of the runners in that race are going to be talented. But like you said, to me, the most interesting aspect will be after the race and whether there were any claims dropped.
Well, certainly a pleasure to check in with Quigley's Corner, and how are you going to send out smoke signals of this meet? You going to just do some tweeting, or you just any?
Oh yeah,
or is it all relaxed?
No. I'll be in the paddock every race. Of course, it's a little bit more relaxed down here, but I don't have nearly the responsibilities that I do up north at the Great Race Place. But I'll be still active on Twitter, primarily tweeting my paddock observations before every race. So if you're not following me on Twitter, do so. It's, as you well know, free of charge and a great means to communicate handicapping information quickly. It's at Quigley's_corner is my Twitter handle, and I have some fun with it. So if you want to follow Southern California Racing, take a look at it.
Tom Quigley, everybody, Quigley's Corner on Twitter, and always a pleasure. And we'll do some serious handicapping into weekends with Tom on Thursdays. Great way to kick off the Del Mar season. Tom, best of luck down there. Before we go, a couple of those restaurant favorites from you.
Well, if your budget is unlimited, then of course the top restaurant near the track that is off the charts good is called The Market. You'll see Mike Smith in there almost on a nightly basis at the sushi bar, but the restaurant is spectacular. The food is incredible. The ambiance is great. Bob Baffert's a frequent visitor as well. So the market nearby is top shelf. And if you're, you know, if you're more on a casual budget and still want to have a lot of fun with a great view of the trap, the Brigantine, there has been horses named called See at the Brig, Meet Me at the Brig. Well, those were all named in honor of the Brigantine restaurant. And that's a very casual restaurant, as I said, overlooking the racetrack itself. So a couple of places if you've never been to Del Mar, if you're looking for some places this weekend, if you're coming out, where I think you'll have a lot of fun.
Tom Quigley, thanks as always. We'll talk next week.
Enjoy opening day at the spa, Steve.
I appreciate it. Tom Quigley, folks, and more Del Mar reporting. And, of course, between Tom and Hammer and Rich Eng and John White, you'll get plenty of opinions. Johnny will be pitching in. Don't think that Johnny D's not clued in. He can't help himself. He's West Coast in his blood. So really, almost on a daily basis, we'll have a balanced coverage when it comes to the Del Mar cards. Johnny Monday, John Tuesday, Quigley and Rich. Rich, you know, Rich does a little bit of both Thursdays, and Hammer on Fridays. Plus, Steve Anderson, check in a few times with Brad Free, Jay Pridman. We got Del Mar covered. Going to take a timeout here. Come back with Tony Black. Tony, we'll have to obviously talk about his experience. Much like George and Jacinto, was really getting into the, you know, into the start of his career. As Ikaiza was retiring, but Tony was with him at Canterbury as well, and he'll reflect on that experience. And we'll let Tony also talk about that term in the dirt, breaking away from underneath a horse. I want him to explain that. Steve Haskin follows. Plus, Dave Grenick and Rich Eng. Busy Thursday at the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is ExpressBet Summer Treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with ExpressBet. And while you're at it, don't miss ExpressBet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool, fun-in-the-sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete fun-in-the-sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.